Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. This episode of the Eye on College Basketball podcast is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And don't forget to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel while you're here. All right, let's get into it. We've made it to the final day of the battle for Atlantis. The title game, Memphis versus Villanova, 3:30 Eastern on ESPN. Villanova got here by beating Texas Tech and North Carolina. Memphis got here by beating Michigan and Arkansas. Degmeg, we'll pick the game in the final 4-1, which I now lead, by the way. Spoiler alert.
Take it easy. Happy Thanksgiving.
Spoiler alert. That I now lead, by the way. But before we do that, I'd just like to get your thoughts on what you've seen from the Tigers so far. We've talked about Villanova after the Wildcats lost to Penn last week, but we haven't really discussed Memphis in any great detail. What do you make of Penny Hardaway's 5-0 Tigers, who could secure a third victory over a top 40 KenPom team a little later on this afternoon?
Third victory in as many days as well. You may recall, although it wasn't final 4-1, I did pick Memphis to win this tournament. So 2 out of 3, got to get one more there. We'll see if it winds up happening. Again, we'll pick this game later in the show, specifically to what Memphis is doing. It's coming out strong. Obviously, has yet to lose a game, has played a relatively decent schedule so far. 5 games in, had a game at Missouri. Now, Missouri is erratic at the moment, but nonetheless, it was a no doubt about it win on the road against a Big Six team. So that's a big one. And then it goes down to the Bahamas and it beats Michigan. It was close, but well earned. And then it beat Arkansas. As it so happened yesterday with the flow of Thanksgiving, you know, went to the in-laws, had the football on. I brought both computer and iPad. I'm trying to watch a ton of this stuff at once. The Memphis-Arkansas game wound up being in the window that was the tightest in terms. I tried to get eyes on everything, knowing that we had plenty to talk about in terms of recap for today and then preview. But admittedly, this was just the one game that I saw, the one game of consequence that I saw less of than any. And I probably caught about 15 minutes total of it. I know David Jones played extremely well, and that's very important. This is coming after Ashton Hardaway the day before had a pretty good game. So they've had a good diversity of production over the past few days here, which is good because, you know, Caleb Mills, you know, if you look at the box score, he fouled out, hasn't been a big factor. He will be a better player, but hasn't been that. Jordan Brown has been up and down, wasn't a huge factor. They won the game because of David Jones on Thursday. There's no doubt about that. And some of it could be Arkansas. Arkansas, you know, it's 4-2 at this point, has the squeaky home loss to UNCG. And then it dodged disaster against Stanford on Wednesday. I was engaged in the majority of that game, and Stanford, if anything, blew multiple opportunities to win that. But the Hogs got that win. They got to come back the next day. Memphis was ready. And, you know, basically had control of the game for most of it, even if it was a tight battle for throughout. But, Penny Hardaway's got himself a good team, and he's got himself a good team even knowing that its roster is not what it was expected to be, you know, at the start of last offseason or even the middle of the offseason without two contributors that were projected to potentially be involved. They're not there with Mikey Williams and DeAndre Williams. But regardless, David Jones, who's got plenty of experience himself, you know, that was a, I thought that was a really key performance there, and to set up Memphis for one of its better starts of the past decade, if it can get a win on Friday in the championship game against Nova.
Yeah, to your point, Memphis's best freshman was supposed to be Mikey Williams. He is not a part of the team in any sort of real capacity. He's technically like, you know, on the roster, but he's obviously not playing, not practicing. He's not even on campus. He's facing 9 felony gun charges. I'd be surprised if he ever plays at the University of Memphis. There was another alternative reality where DeAndre Williams would have been expected to be their best player, but he did not have his waiver for an extra year of eligibility approved. So what Memphis was supposed to be, or at least what Memphis theoretically could have been, is not actually what Memphis is, like you made it, like you made a point of, but they're still 5-0 with three top 40 KenPom wins and could add a fourth one later today. And there's something you touched on that I think is important. 5-0 with two top 40 KenPom wins, could get a third one later today. The Missouri one's a true road win, but Missouri has slipped in KenPom down to closer to 100 than, say, the top 40. Memphis has played 5 games, and against Missouri, Javon Quinterly was the best player. Against Michigan, Ashton Hardaway was the most important player. And then against Arkansas, it was clearly David Jones. So they're getting it from different places. They don't need the same guy to go out and go big every night. And David Jones has really been great. He, for people unfamiliar, played 2 seasons at DePaul, played 2 seasons for Golden Gate Mike, and now he's at Memphis looking like the best player on a dangerous team. And oh, by the way, I think he turns 22 years old today. I think today's his birthday.
Happy birthday, David
Jones.
Happy
birthday to David Jones. Would you like to tell him, after we just wished him happy birthday, why you left him off your ballot for top 101 players in college basketball this preseason? Because I didn't. He was on my ballot.
So he was not.
I swear to God he was. Ask Marcus Nelson.
Well, that might be Golden Gate Mike bias there. But the reason why that he played 2 seasons at DePaul and 2 seasons for Golden Gate Mike, I can't reasonably expect someone to come out of that kind of situation looking like a top 100 player.
I could. I did. Okay. No, in all seriousness, I had heard so much good stuff about him in the preseason that I was like, there were people who I trusted who were starting to say he looks like he might be Memphis's best player. And I thought Memphis's best player was going to have to be a top 101 player in college basketball.
Yes. Sure, absolutely. And it's they're off to a nice start there after getting a pair of wins. We'll see one emanates later today. And again, we'll pick that game in a second. Can we pivot to Nova?
Well, I did just want to make a couple more points about this Memphis roster. Right. One is that everybody knows the age. Like that's been touched on, or a lot of people know the age. And I'll run you through that in a minute just so you'll have all the right information. But Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal, he's one of the Memphis basketball beat writers, tweeted the following last night. Like this is remarkable for a couple of different reasons. One is in game one of year two, which we've discussed before, Penny Hardaway started 5 freshmen. In the semifinals of the Battle for Atlantis, he started a 1 fourth year player and I believe 4 fifth year players. It's a very experienced roster. These guys haven't played together much, but they've all played a lot of college basketball. As Jason Munns points out, they all, like 4 of the 5 starters, Javon Quinterly, David Jones, Jaquan Walton, Jordan Brown, committed to Memphis like in June, July. So in May, and this is not normal, in May of this calendar year, Memphis didn't even really have a team that looked like it could go to the NCAA tournament. There were no or very few competent players on the roster. And then in June, July, they hit on all these guys, and now they got a team that could win the Battle for Atlantis. And yes, you hear it on every broadcast that Memphis plays this season. It is worth noting. This is if only because it's unusual for college basketball and it's dramatically different from where Penny Hardaway was just a few years ago. It's an extremely experienced basketball team. Javon Quinterly. Oh, I mean, hey, it's birthday week at Memphis.
27.
David Jones turns 22 today. Javon Quinterly turns 25 tomorrow.
Happy birthday, Javon.
Happy birthday to Javon Quinter. Do you want to explain to him why you left him off your top 101?
You're out of your mind, dude. I had Quinterly easily on my list. Easily.
Okay, I don't know that I had Quinterly.
Yeah, I had Quinterly like top 70.
I think I had Jordan Brown and...
You want to explain to Javon Quinterly why you left him off your list?
It was an oversight.
Yeah.
It was your classic oversight.
Right now. Yeah.
It was your classic oversight by me. He was 0-6, by the way, against Arkansas.
Well, there you go. Looks like you might have been onto something.
Yeah, no, it's just, hey. Life is filled with ups and downs, dead leg. You're going to have some ups at Missouri and some downs against Arkansas.
That's what they say.
Hey, he came from the SEC.
Yep.
He had ups against Missouri and downs against Arkansas. Perhaps, yeah. You remember where he started his career, don't you?
Yeah, he started against Villanova. Plot twist.
Plot twist. Quinterly turns 25 tomorrow. Caleb Bills is 23. David Jones turns 22 today. Jaycon Quan Walton is 22. Jordan Brown turns 24 in 10 days. So at Memphis, no starters younger than 22. One former McDonald's All-American turns 25 this weekend. Another former McDonald's All-American turns 24 in 10 days. So in 10 days, the average age of the Memphis starting lineup will be 23.2. And that should not be considered a joke. It's a fact. And it shouldn't be ridiculed as much as it should be celebrated as growth and adjustment. Like I said, Penny Hardaway used to rely heavily on freshmen. It didn't work as well as he anticipated or most anticipated. He has now pivoted into the transfer portal. And yes, he does have a freshman, his son, who is making an impact this season. But most of the good stuff connected to this team, they're Division I transfers who are older than your typical college basketball players. I want to ask you, before we move on to Villanova, about Arkansas. You took a lot of heat for having the Razorbacks 47th in the preseason. Arkansas is now 4-2, zero top 65 KenPom wins, losses to Memphis and UNC Greensboro. You proud of yourself?
Not yet. I'm going to Fayetteville in 5 days, so they're hosting Duke, and we'll see what they do here on Friday.
I can't believe you're going to even show your face in Fayetteville.
Listen, you're going to say something, you got to back it up, you got to show up. Okay,
that's right. That's right.
I'm breaking some news to Arkansas fans there. I don't think I'd publicly let it be known.
Hey, they'll be waiting for you at the airport.
I certainly hope so.
Arkansas fans, I'll hit you with this flight info just as soon as I get
you. Absolutely will not.
Meet him at the airport.
I bring that up to say let's see what happens here on Friday, and then see how they respond. Regardless of how this goes for Arkansas, let's see if when they get that home court advantage against Duke, they've got some good opportunities. All right. You got to play North Carolina. We're going to North Carolina in just a second here. But yeah, that's going to be, that game is going to be, the loser of Arkansas, North Carolina. You're smashing the panic button. Smash the like button while you're here. Listen to the podcast as always, but you're smashing the panic button. If you're either one of those programs, because you're going to go home from Battle for Atlantis with a losing record in that event. And with Arkansas, it would be 3 in the past 4, and then you got to turn around and play Duke. So the rare instance where a non-ACC team's got to play UNC and then Duke in consecutive games, obviously that doesn't happen too much. Speaking of UNC and that it didn't win over Nova, Nova's yet to lose in this event. It's 8-0 all-time in Battle for Atlantis. Keep that in mind as it gets ready to play Memphis later on Friday. Armando Bacot's got to be better. I watched the entirety of its game against Nova. Cormac Ryan went down. I don't know that, as we talk here on Friday morning, I don't know the status of his ankle. He was hurt. I don't know if he is going to, I don't know if he's going to be available to give it a go or not, but they certainly.
If he were an NBA player, he'd be out 3 to 5.
Yeah.
I don't know what a college basketball player does. NBA player, that's 3 to 5.
Yeah, Nova loses. Nova wins 83-81 on Thanksgiving to Nova over UNC. Cormac Ryan was a big part of that. RJ Davis had a team high 23 points. Bacot only had 8 boards, 4 fouls. I mean, he had 18 rebounds, but on the offensive end, he just needs to be a bit more dynamic. Who was dynamic? Another guy I had in my top 100. Why didn't you? Are you about to apologize to Harrison Ingram? Huh?
I don't think I need to apologize to Harrison Ingram. I think I probably had him top 101.
I think you definitely did not.
Either way, I'm not going to apologize to Harrison Ingram. Harrison Ingram should apologize to me.
Okay, he had 20. He also fouled out. There were foul issues. Carolina didn't get a generous whistle. Nova winds up winning in overtime. UNC, if you're a UNC fan, you just kind of like the antenna go up a little bit with this kind of stuff. There might be some flashbacks to what didn't happen or what did happen in PK 85 a year ago, albeit with a much higher number next to your name. North Carolina's 14th right now overall in the country. Nova got an incredible game out of Eric Dixon. He had a career high 34 points. Our dude shot five threes and made three of them. I think he made his first three of those. I think he
just posted up everybody nonstop. He looked like a grown man playing against kids.
And that is Dixon's game. When I was watching, I was like, this is why I like Dixon and why I like Nova, because, well, you know, Nova forever has had, you know,
they back down these guards nonstop.
They're just gonna back you down and here's my ass and deal with it. And I'm just going to just post and post and post. I mean, Jalen Brunson turned himself into, you know, an incredible NBA player. And the foundations of that were Jay Wright said, yeah, you go ahead, fella, go ahead and post him up. And Dixon, I mean, how many players in the country actually play like Dixon does? I think that's why I love the sport. It's a fun change of pace there. He was outstanding. Him and Justin Moore combined for 50 points, and Moore had 16 points. They got a little bit there from Armstrong. I actually thought Villanova, I thought it was a good sign for Nova in that it won the game, but the whole time I was watching, I was like, they can get to another level here, and they never did, and they wound up winning, and some of it was the on the beneficial end of some foul shots. They also shot well. They're shooting pretty damn well overall from the free throw line in this tournament, but yeah, I mean, Nova went to the line 36 times. Carolina went 23. That's not the sole reason why Carolina lost, but I thought it was certainly an impact there. Don't know what your Thanksgiving day was like in terms of how it unfolded, but were you able to get eyes on this for a decent amount of time? And your thoughts on Nova kind of, you know, scooting past Carolina to meet Memphis in the title game here?
Yeah, I watched pretty much every minute of it. Nova Carolina was in the window where first stop. I don't know how you have to do Thanksgiving. My wife and I, we both come from broken homes.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you got a lot of places to be on holiday. This is a real pain in the ass.
I got you.
If you can ever, as an adult, work through your marriage problems, I suggest working through them just so your kids don't have to go to a million different places on holidays.
Yeah.
No, just I hear like you. Try therapy before you call it quits, you know?
So you were scooting all around the greater.
No, but this one was mother-in-law's home.
Same.
And it's one of those deals where, okay, we've eaten and now everybody's just in their little groups talking, mm-hmm. but I don't really have a little group.
Yeah. You're not a little group guy.
I don't really have a little group. So
you're a little guy guy. You're on your own. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just over there with my brother-in-law watching basketball. Right, and so, I saw just about every minute of it. And every time I watch Villanova closely, I'm just amazed at how often their little people score at the rim. They're the best program in America at having little people score at the rim.
There you go. It's hard for me to disagree with that.
I'm gonna need some Bart Torvik to look. Can Evan Miege look on that? I need some data to support my claim, which is nobody has little people score at the rim better than Villanova. That's my claim. I have nothing to support it. Just feels that way.
They got it done, man. They were efficient, and you're not going to get 25 plus from Dixon on a nightly basis, but if he's going to be able to show up like this, and Justin Moore, I find to be highly reliable, then you just get TJ Bamba, Tyler Burton, the transfers from Washington State, Richmond, respectively, like get them more involved. Mark Armstrong, I'll tell you this. Maybe it happens Friday. Maybe we don't see it for 3 to 6 weeks. Mark Armstrong will grow into a more reliable lead guard. I expect that to happen. It might take a little bit more time, but Nova's upside is still pretty strong, and it has responded well to, you know, the loss in the Palestra to Penn, which was a shock to the system, but since then hasn't lost, and we'll see if it can get out of here, having been undefeated in the history of the Battle for Atlantis tournament. Got to get one more win in order to do that. Carolina, I'll tee you right back up here, GP, because we'll see what happens here. If UNC can turn around and get a win today, it would be significant, but when I watched this game, I saw a Carolina team that has the personnel to overcome these kinds of games. and it went to OT. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like it was a close battle, but if UNC is going to be, you know, what it has been projected to be, top 20 kind of level, it needs to win these kind of games the way they play out more often than not. And it just didn't, happen on Thursday.
Yeah. I dropped North Carolina from the top 25-1. I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt anymore. Yeah. Like I mean, I did in the preseason, obviously, but you just lost to a Villanova team that has been shaky this season. Really for two straight seasons. You know, they lost to Penn. I guess it was last week, early last week. So if North Carolina bounces back and handles Arkansas, then it's an easy move. I can get Arkansas out of there. Arkansas would have three losses at that point, one to UNC Greensboro. I can push Carolina back in. But as of this morning, Carolina out of the top 25-1. I don't think this is going to be like last year, but it's certainly, last year was one of those deals where you looked at the individual pieces and you go, that team should be better than it is. And it's just one overtime loss. I got it. We could be talking about Carolina on the verge of winning the battle for Atlantis if you know, they get one stop here, make one shot there. Mm-hmm. But you know, they did just lose to a Villanova team that had lost to Penn last week. That's not a good. It's not where you wanted to be if you were Carolina.
Want to get on to doings on the other side of the country, in the other ocean here?
Oh man, it's way over yonder.
It is over yonder. That's for
man.
Sure.
What they boy? I tell you one thing I know about Hawaii. It's way over yonder. I mean, I'm not a...
Nope, you're not.
Purdue is 6-0 after winning the Maui Invitational. Way over yonder. We'll get into that next. First, a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Purdue is 6-0 after winning the Maui Invitational in Honolulu. So the Boilermakers now own victories over the teams ranked 6th, 9th, 11th at KenPom. That's Marquette, Gonzaga, mm-hmm. and Tennessee. They're number one at KenPom, number one at Bart Torvik, number one at Evan Mia. They only got 5 first-place votes, Purdue did, in last week's AP poll. That was before the Maui Invitational was played. They should get all 61 first-place votes when the AP poll updates this Monday. At least based on resume, it's possible the 3 voters who voted Arizona number one last week and the one voter who voted UConn number one last week, they'll just stick with the Wildcats and Huskies, and that's fine. The 52 voters who had Kansas number one should now flip to Purdue. So Purdue should get, I think, you know, somewhere between 55 and 60 first place votes on Monday and be the clear number one team in the country in the AP poll. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. That should be the case. And a little note there with Purdue, it's going to be number one for the 3rd straight season. And it wasn't until 2 seasons ago that Purdue had ever been number one in the country in the AP top 25. So the program went, you know, more than 100 years in its existence. AP poll began, 65 plus so years ago. It finally got there, and now 3 straight years. And then how about this? Credit to Chris Foreman, dedicated podcast listener, sports information director at Purdue. This was in his notes. When Purdue gets to this, when it gets to the number one ranking, this is stunning to me. It will be the first Big Ten team in history to get number one in the AP top 25 in 3 consecutive seasons. It's never happened by a Big Ten.
I don't know. That can't be right.
That's wild.
I think it just can't be right.
I saw it in some game notes. So
repeat it again. Let me make sure I've got this.
Purdue's going to earn the number one ranking.
Right.
Okay. It is going to make that number one ranking for the third consecutive season.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be the only Big Ten team ever to get the number one ranking in three consecutive seasons.
That can't be right.
I might have screwed up my notes here, but this is what I had. I'm going to go look at this again because I couldn't believe it. Now, granted, it's squeezing in a ton here on a Thanksgiving Thursday into Friday, right. But I'm almost positive that's what he put in there.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not here to question Chris. It's just that there's a blue blood program in the Big Ten called Indiana, and there's no scenario where you could be a blue blood program and not be ranked number one in the country three straight years. Yes. And Indiana's in the Big Ten, so I just don't buy it.
Okay. This is the exact note. Purdue is now this is genuinely shocking. Okay. Purdue is now positioned to be ranked number one in the country for the third straight season.
Yes, that's totally believable. Purdue is awesome, is the most believable part of this.
Prior to 21-22, Purdue had never been ranked number one. If it were to happen, Purdue will be the first team in Big Ten history to be voted number one in three straight seasons.
That's the part I can't buy.
Well, I don't tell you.
You help me here. All right. Is Indiana a blue blood program or not?
I actually think that's up for debate, but let's...
No, it's not. Indiana's a blue blood program.
I don't think it is something that you can get and then are at no risk of ever losing. Okay? That's all I'll say.
Indiana's a blue blood program that has settled into being typically the second best in the state of Indiana, but is currently third and is at risk of slipping to fourth. All right? I just don't see a scenario how our blue blood program could never in the history of its blue blood. In the history of its blue blood, I don't see how a program could not reach number one in a country three straight years. That's crazy. I'm not trying to doubt game notes, but like, I don't believe that. I just don't believe it. I'm going to be a Purdue game notes denier simply because I can't fathom the idea that a blue blood program like Indiana could really let its in-state rival do something like this that it's never done before in all its blue blood.
On a separate note, we are living in the golden age of Maui title games. Since 2017, here have been the final scores since 2017 in the title games. 2017, Notre Dame beats Wichita State 67-66. 2018, Gonzaga gives Duke its only loss in Maui history, 89-87. 2019, Kansas famously beats Dayton in overtime, 90-84, just the second all-time overtime affair in Maui championship game history. 2020, it wasn't out yonder. It was down in Asheville, North Carolina. Texas won in the final second. Who hit that? Matt Coleman, maybe? 69-67 over North Carolina. 2 years ago wasn't an outstanding game. It was actually in Vegas, but Wisconsin did beat St. Mary's, and it was a two-possession game, 61-55. A season ago, Arizona over Creighton, 81-79, two-point game. And then here we get yet another tremendous one with Purdue going up against Marquette, winning 78-75. Cam Jones had a desperation, 39-footer that didn't fall. Purdue gets its first Maui championship title.
Oh, it fell. It just didn't fall anywhere close to the rim.
It didn't fall true. Okay, that's a little harsh, but accurate nonetheless.
That's my little homie from Memphis. He knows he's in my heart.
He had 17 points. He did well for himself. Tyler Kolick, I'll commend Kolick. He had 22 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and went 3 games in 3 days. Again, just didn't have a bad ankle. I've never been more convinced. He never actually sprained his ankle. Tyler Kolick looked terrific, but Purdue gets the win. Edie averaged 25.3 points, 13.0 boards and 2.0 blocks over 3 games in 3 days. Braden Smith had 18 points, looked really good against Marquette. And then Lance Jones, I got another note from Chris Foreman, made what is believed to be the longest shot in school history. Foreman, live update. He's watching the pod. Either he's watching or someone told him and texted him. He goes, "Hey, I'm right. Trust me." Sit down, Gary Parrish. He's right.
I just can't.
Don't doubt him.
I told you I don't doubt. I never would doubt Chris. It's just hard to believe that there's a blue blood program in the Big Ten that has never done what Purdue has now done. That just seems crazy to me.
Don't be a Purdue notes denier. Okay. It ends right here, right now.
It's just hard to believe. I'm not saying I don't believe it. I'm just saying it's hard to believe.
Yeah, exactly. Lance Jones made what is believed.
It'd be like if you told me, hey, Alabama's about to be number one in the AP poll in men's basketball for the third consecutive year and become the first SEC program to ever do that. I'd be like, hold up. What about Kentucky? It's a blue blood. Well, this should be a rule, I think. You can't be a blue blood if people in your own league are doing great things that you've never done. Can we make that a rule?
I'm not going to go that far. Seems a little harsh.
If other schools in your state are doing great things that you've never done, are you really a blue blood? Happy birthday, David Jones.
Okay. Lance Jones sank an 80-footer at the buzzer before halftime. An outrageous shot. The arc on that rainbow heave was ridiculous. Note with this Maui tournament. So after going 51 years without having anyone in the sport play the AP number one and number two team in back-to-back games, two teams did it by nature of how the bracket fell. So Marquette and Tennessee were the first team since Loyola Chicago in 72 to do that. Coincidentally enough, little historical fact for you, Loyola Chicago is the only team to play number one and number two on consecutive days and win both of those games, but it wasn't the 72 team. It was the Loyola Chicago team that famously won the whole damn thing in 63 in the NCAA tournament. Big ups to Purdue. It obviously has the best resume in the sport, going to be number one. It's still going to get judged on what happens in March, but that doesn't mean it, because I was thinking about this. I knew we'd talk about it. Yeah, I get it, and I don't disagree. Purdue starts strong, gets wins over Gonzaga, Tennessee, Marquette, in addition to Xavier. You know, three of those teams would not surprise any of us if we look up and they're all playing in the Sweet 16 later on this season. Doesn't mean that we can't acknowledge that Purdue hasn't done well so far and celebrate for what it is right now. Yeah, I get it. Like, it's going to be judged on not falling on its face in the tournament. It's still got more really good non-conference. Still got to play Alabama later this non-conference season and Arizona. So they've still got two more, and already it's set up for such a huge non-conference resume. Ranks top five in defense, top two in offense right now. The guards do look improved. Yes, Purdue is going to take some losses, but you know, it wouldn't have, if it had gone a different way, it wouldn't have stunned anyone. In a different way, I mean, like, they go 2-1 in Maui, or maybe 1-2. And if they went 1-2, then we would have to have a real discussion. But that's not where we're at. We're at 6-0, number one team in the country. Number one, it was number one in predictives across the board entering the season. Obviously continues that, if not strengthens its hold overall. And there is something to be said for doing that against this level of competition. This was the best Maui field ever. Greatest, really. November, December, MTE ever, as far as I was concerned. And statistically, that was the case with five ranked teams. And UCLA was ranked, then weirdly got booted when it was refreshed the poll on Monday. So it was six ranked teams heading into it, and then it was officially five when it started. Congrats to Purdue. I've got thoughts on Marquette, but give me what you got on the Boilers.
Well, first on Edie, he is statistically very similar, if not arguably better, than he was last season. He's averaging 23 points, 11.5 rebounds, 2.8 blocks in 28.5 minutes per game. So his points are up 0.7 per game. Rebounds are down 1.4 per game. Blocks are up 0.7 per game. Minutes are down 3.2 per game. But that minutes per game number is a little manipulated because he only played 20 minutes against Samford in a 53-point win in the opener. And we've only played six games so far. So against high majors, Zach Edey is now averaging 31.8 minutes per game. And that's more in line with the 31.7 average last season. He's just an awesome college basketball player who is picking up right where he left off. And he's surrounded. And you mentioned Lance Jones. Like, we got, you know, a lot of these guys Purdue is relying on are guys that we watched them win a Big Ten title with, Big Ten tournament title with last season. Lance Jones is the transfer from Southern Illinois, and he's averaging 9.5 points, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 27.5 minutes per game so far this season. He's obviously good. He does make them smaller. Does that concern you at all? Like they go Braden Smith, Lance Jones, Fletcher Lawyer. I guess it's 6'1", 6'4" maybe in the backcourt. That might hurt you in the NBA. I don't think that's going to bother you too much in college.
I'm not that bothered by it. In fact, I do like the change of pace with that, especially if, like, you know, Braden Smith is making good strides here. Fletcher Lawyer, you know, he actually showed up relatively well overall. And you're getting, like, Miles Colvin, he's going to get some good burn. Like, he's not small, he's 6'5". The two, like, newer names that are contributing majorly relative to expectation, I guess, are Jones and then Colvin, who's a freshman. Lance Jones, obviously, senior, much older. But, no, I like the change of pace of that. There were a couple instances in the Marquette game where when I was watching, it seemed like the actions that they were running were specifically designed to get Braden Smith or Lawyer or Lance Jones a look. And then sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. And then Edie's just 7'4". What do you want? And our guy just, you know, there were two instances I remember where Oso Iguodala was straight up, you know, had his arms wrapped around Edie like he was a Black Friday special. I mean, there was no faking it. It was, I'm just beat here.
He tried to purchase that Edie.
It was
at a discount.
There was one where I think Shulman said on the call might be a hook and hold. And then Billis was like, it's a hold, because he did. He wrapped him up, my man. So I don't think the size discrepancy is a negative for Purdue. I get where you're going, but as long as you're going to have Edie out there, and if you pair, it depends on the lineup you show up. Like, Trey Kaufman-Wren hasn't like hit yet. We'll see if he does or not, but he's got some length to him. Caleb First is a bigger guy. So I actually like the different kind of looks and diversity that Painter can throw with those lineups.
All right. Just some other notable results from the past couple of days. The most surprising, Colorado State blasted Creighton. Do you see that coming?
I did.
You did?
No. No, I didn't. Hold on. Before we get to that, I did real quick on KU Tennessee. Let's just do Maui real quick and then we can go. Because Colorado State Creighton, I do want to focus on. Tennessee gets out 1-2. Vescovy had a good game. Connect and Ganey had 26 total between them. But Dickinson, man, 17 points, 20 rebounds. Bill Self said afterward, quote, it was a great win for us today. We struggled last night and to bounce back in 13 hours to play a team as good as Tennessee and hang in there under some fairly adverse conditions for some of our players. It was just a terrific thing and one that we'll look back on in February and be thankful for, end quote. He's right. McCullough and Adams played well alongside him. And then Dewan Harris continues to be an understated, valuable point guard for how capable he is of greasing this offense. He's at 7.2 assists this season. He's almost certainly going to finish top five in the country in assists per game. And that's in addition to being one of the best defensive guards in the country. And he is one of the best defensive guards in the country with the frame that he has, man. He's not overly athletic and super muscular. He's not some 6'4", hybrid power point guard. That's not what he is. He's just a really, really impressive player. And to have that in addition to Dickinson being the first Kansas player, oh, by the way, since Cole Aldridge, 14 seasons ago, to have multiple 20 rebound games in a season, and we are not out of November yet. Good on Dickinson. Kansas continued to shoot well. It didn't the day before, but Kansas has been one of the best shooting teams in the country, and to do it against Tennessee on short rest, that was impressive. So KU holds its standing. It'll continue to be a top 10 team in the polls when they refresh on Monday. Good on them. Tennessee, tough deal. You got to play, top two teams on back-to-back days. Can't get a win against either of them. Vols will still have chances, but at least the game was certainly a better watch than the one before. And then real quick, the late game, GP, I faded. I tried to make it through. About the under 16 of the second half, I was down for the count on the couch. Gonzaga, UCLA, late Thursday morning. It wasn't even Friday night on the East Coast there. I got to note that Anton Watson had 32 points. best game of his career, shot 14 of 15 from the field. Anton Watson went 3 for 3 from 3-point range. This is like a significant development for Gonzaga. Good on them. Even though it happened by nature of bracket play, I would love to see Gonzaga and UCLA somehow manage to play each other every season. They have a habit of playing close games. Gonzaga won this one 69-65. Gonzaga is now 97-2 in its last 99 games against unranked teams. And as I noted earlier, UCLA was unranked. It was 25th the week before. It didn't lose a game. Fell out of the rankings there. Gonzaga leads the all-time series with UCLA 6-2 and has won 4 straight dating back to Jalen Suggs at the buzzer in the 2021 Final Four. UCLA's got some intriguing promise, but goes home 1-2 in Maui. Now, to your point on Colorado State, holy hell. That was the stunner. That was the, let me check the scores here. Wait a second. What is going on? Creighton just non-competitive, man. And this is a major, major development for Colorado State, for the Mountain West. CSU, in terms of resume, first of all, you have to have them ranked, right? Don't even think about telling me that it beat Creighton on a neutral and you did not have them, that team undefeated in your rankings now.
Colorado State is 6-0 and now ranked 17th in the top 25-1.
And where do you have Creighton?
18. See how that works?
They kick their ass and you have them only one spot behind on a neutral? I don't know about that.
I can't believe Indiana never did that.
I don't know about that. Colorado State's first top 10 win in 40 years almost. Trivia time.
Okay.
I don't even get this. Unless you looked it up. Who was the top 10 team Colorado State beat in 1984?
Indiana.
Enough. Who was the top 10 team?
Indiana probably wasn't in the top 10. I guess Purdue. Purdue would have been in the top 10, I'm sure.
Not Purdue. It was Texas El Paso, ranked 5th in the country. Wasn't UTEP. Even like a great Colorado State team that season, but they got a top 10 win. Good for Nico Medved. CSU led early, led big early. Creighton never threatened, man. Creighton shot 28% and only made 6 3-pointers. That's the fewest in a game so far this season for the Blue Jays. Isaiah Stevens, real ones know, it's one of the best point guards in the country. He went for 22 points, 7 assists, 6 boards. Right now, the Rams rank 5th in the country in effective field goal percentage. That's a major development there again. For Creighton, okay, maybe it's one stinker. Circle back a little bit here. They got notable games coming up. But for Colorado State, seed line bump, if I've ever seen one. That is huge. That is a huge. It's the one result over the past 48 hours that nobody saw coming. Like maybe Colorado State could have kept it competitive, but you know, no one was thinking CSU in the money line. So congrats to the Rams on getting that done and getting it done definitively to move up into top 30 realm and predictive metrics and just 69-48, completely shut down a Creighton team that I'll say Creighton's point totals prior to this 105 points, 89, 92, 82, 88, 48. I'm looking at the schedule who Creighton plays. I'm going to say Creighton doesn't finish under 60 again the rest of the season. Under 70 almost certainly will happen, but I don't know if it'll be held to below 60 points again. It is a really good offensive team. CSU just had it. Creighton did not.
Arizona in Palm Springs defeats Michigan State 74-68. I want to be fair to Palm Springs. Crowd looked pretty good.
I didn't see Bo Ryan anywhere, by the way. And I didn't see Bo Ryan either. I was looking every time into and out of the break, every quick pan to the crowd. Bo Ryan, where are you at?
The way I pictured it was like, I'd turn on Fox and Bo Ryan just be sitting there by himself. Like nobody else everybody else in Palm Springs is like, are you crazy? We're in Palm Springs. We're not going to a college basketball game. It's nuts. We're in Palm Springs. We're going to watch a stupid college basketball game on Thanksgiving. The crowd looked good.
It did.
Arizona looked great.
I wouldn't say it looked great.
How about this? Arizona looks great.
It's getting it done. And that's the team, I think. I don't have this statistically. And maybe it's Purdue after the... it probably is Purdue after Maui. But Arizona, how about this? Arizona is scheduled with intent to have... Tommy Lloyd wanted to have one of the very hardest non-conference schedules in the country. and has gotten through a lot of it and hasn't taken a loss yet. There's even more coming. We'll get to that on future shows when Zona still got big games remaining, including against Purdue. Tommy Lloyd is now 13-4 against AP ranked teams since he got to Arizona. That's an outstanding record against ranked competition, obviously. And they're getting, and credit to Michigan State for it. Like, MSU was down and it rallied. It got down by what, 14 or 15 points in this game, and did take, it got the lead late in the game. And I thought that was an important development for an MSU team. Don't tell me you have this team ranked. I know that they've taken three respectable losses, but they're 3-3. You do not still have them ranked, do you?
I do.
Okay, you're out of your mind.
You're out of your mind.
No. They can earn it back in. To have them ranked right now, to me, I think is a misstep personally. They're 3-3.
I understand you're a misstep personally.
Okay. Do you have the undefeated James Madison Dukes, who, according to Torvik, have a top five resume so far this season? Do you have that team that beat Michigan State on its floor? Do you have them ranked yet or no?
Nope.
Yeah. So okay, keep the score. All right, there we go.
My early season rule. I believe in you if I believed in you until you prove to me that I can no longer believe in you.
The problem with that is you are taking it strictly from your own personal bias and point of view, and there might be a certain level.
Have any personal bias.
In your own rankings?
I have no personal bias in any aspect of my life. Zero.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Zero. And similarly, if I didn't believe in you, I continue to not believe in you until you make it clear that I must believe in you. Yeah. And I'll be honest, when James Madison beat Fresno State's brains in the other night,
yes,
did it start to occur to me maybe I should believe a little more? Yes, it started to occur to me. But here's the truth, and I mean this is, I'm not even joking around. Because when I talk about these types of things, I know that these are the types of words that can matter to a program like James Madison. So I'm not joking around here. I'm not trying to be funny. The main reason James Madison is ranked right now is because they won at Michigan State to open the season. And hey, that's obviously great. It was an overtime win when Michigan State was 1 of 20 from three. Michigan State shot 5% from three. That's an anomaly. That will never happen again this season. And so if Michigan State shoots 3 of 20 from three, that outcome might be different and we wouldn't even be having this conversation. James Madison is still, and I know there's preseason bias in this, but all the way down at 67th at KenPom.
Yeah, I'm reminding you, if you remove all preseason bias, per Torvik, James Madison is a top five resume in the sport. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, here's the thing.
In fact, it's third right now. Per Torvik, the best resumes this season: Purdue is one, Marquette is two, JMU is three, Arizona is four, and Memphis is five. Colorado State is six.
Okay, well, let me say this. You know how much I love Bart Torvik. You know how much I love sorting data.
Yeah, you didn't sort this one.
Okay, it's outrageous that somebody would suggest James Madison has a top three resume in the sport right now. They have one top 95 win, according to KenPom.
Okay, take it up, Torvik.
I'm not taking it up with anybody.
Take it up with them.
I wouldn't. I love Bart Torvik. I love sorting data.
So you would agree that Purdue has the best resume. Marquette should be in that conversation. Arizona, Memphis. These are teams that should be in the conversation, but James Madison just should not.
I'm telling you that James Madison does not have a top three resume in the sport.
All right.
I'm telling you, James Madison is off to a tremendous start. I'm happy for them. I wish their football team would be allowed to play in a bowl game. I have great respect for the fourth president of the United States and his vice president, George Clinton. But James Madison does not have a top three resume in the sport. That's crazy.
Okay.
I mean, that's nuts. You would agree that's nuts, right?
I wouldn't rank a top three, but okay, I would.
We agree. Let's move on.
Okay. let's move on and quickly wrap on this game. We still got to do the Final Four in one. Oh, good God.
I'm leading, by the way.
Kashad Johnson. Whew. Man, talk about a get in the transfer portal. Arizona has good balance overall. But between him, Caleb Love was, you know, he had some good spots and some not so good spots. And we had some,
it's the story of his life.
I know, chatter in the chat earlier about that in terms of what Love brought. But overall, having him on the floor bettered them to the cause of winning the game. Arizona has gone six straight games having five players get to 10 points or more, five players in double figures. Only team in the entire country that has been able to do that this season. A major advancement for Tommy Lloyd's program, in addition to what they can do defensively. Shouts to Jaden Bradley. It was his big shot with about a minute 25 to go in the game that gave Arizona lead back, and it wound up winning. I continue to be impressed by Tyson Walker. He will be that guy. I was curious if he would be this season for MSU, but he clearly is. AJ Hogard had 15 points in the loss. The big problem for Michigan State is it continues to get beat on the boards in a way that it hasn't been for the majority of Izzo's career. We'll see if it can grow out of that, or if this is going to be a season-long thing where MSU is going to have to outshoot its opponent and continually be losing the board battle on both ends. It happened again against Arizona. If you watch the game and watch the flow of it, yes, MSU made a push and they were able to come back. But the rebounding thing is a major, major, major issue for them. And this is an unusually rocky November for Michigan State. Yes, it has taken plenty of losses against good competition over the years under Izzo in November and December. But we don't often see Michigan State, you know, look up around Thanksgiving and it's sitting there at 500. And that is the case right now with Sparty and some recalibrations on where I think it lands in the overall hierarchy in the Big Ten, I think is fair.
Are you ready to get to the Final Four and one?
I'll just give one more shout out to a Big Ten team. Wisconsin beat Virginia and SMU to get to 4-2 and steady its season a bit. So that was a good development over the past couple of days. But otherwise, yeah, let's get to this Final Four and one. We're running a little late here.
I don't know if you've been keeping up with it, but I am leading the Final Four and one, just like always. We're going to get into that next, but first, another word from our partners.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello everyone, it's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
The Final Four and One is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. GP season record, 6-4. Deadleg season record, 5-5. Do you see Dolly Parton sing We Are the Champions?
When it went to halftime, there were two other hoops games. So those games had the volume on. Dolly Parton was on, but it was on mute. Dolly Parton, one of a kind. I mean, just
goat.
Goat. Goated, no doubt about it. What I entirely missed, because it happened on our drive from our house to...
What I was trying to tell you is she was singing it for me.
She wasn't.
6-4 in the Final Four.
Driving from our house to the in-laws, I missed Jack Harlow's apparently inferior halftime setup.
Here's the problem.
I didn't see it at all.
They set him up to fail.
I saw a picture of this thing. Man, what are we doing? Hey,
first off, I've noticed this before. Jack Harlow became that guy that got invited to perform on every award show that's on TV. Like, he reached that point where you could just bet on it. Like, hey, what's on tonight? Oh, it's the Grammys. It's the BET Award. Whatever it was. MTV Awards. Oh, Jack Harlow's performing. He's talented. His songs are not good for television performances. There's not a single song that hits on television. And so he's just up there being talented, but it doesn't play well on television. And then they spent nothing on his set. Like, your set. We invested more in your set,
yeah,
than they did in Jack Harlow's. They set him up to fail. I felt bad for the guy because he's getting dragged yesterday. And he seems like a nice fella. He didn't deserve that. He did his best. He did his best.
That's all we can ask.
That's all you can ask from somebody. Just do your best.
Best you can is good enough.
Yeah.
There we go, Nada. What's game one?
Game one, Friday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. It's Villanova versus Memphis inside the Sidney Poitier Arena in Nassau, Bahamas. You can watch it on ESPN. Villanova minus -3. Did you know?
This was Buddy Hield. That was a different spot?
Yes, it's a different spot. We're in the Imperial Arena now.
Okay, what was the Buddy Hield one?
I think that was something different.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, this is Sidney Poitier Arena. Did you know Sidney Poitier was born in the Bahamas?
Who doesn't know that?
Okay. Ha ha, trick. He wasn't. But he was raised in the Bahamas.
You got me.
Oh, I got you. Look how dumb you look now.
I tricked you, Norlander.
How about this? He's from the Bahamas. His parents went on a holiday to Miami, and his mom delivered him in Miami. So he was technically born American, but only because his mom had him when they were on vacation.
Okay, but he's Bahamian in his family tree. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, his mom and dad both from the Bahamas. He was raised in the Bahamas, but he was technically born American because he was born on a vacation. It'd be like if me and my wife went to Greece and had a kid while we were in Greece, had us a little Greek freak. Man, I could have had a Greek freak. I didn't even plan it that well.
I assure you, your offspring would not be referred to as the Greek freak.
Why don't more people do that? Why don't you get pregnant and then on your due date fly to Greece, deliver your baby, and have a little Greek freak?
We are picking Villanova against Memphis. What's the line?
Villanova minus -3. You can watch it on ESPN.
I'm going to keep this short. I picked Memphis to win this tournament. I'm not going to shift off of that. We have a good, and credit to anyone here for the YouTube, anyone that got in advance of the games, because this is a good Friday. We're going to set a show podcast record here in a minute in terms of picking games day of. I will go Memphis to win this one and get itself a conch shell. Conch shell and some marble. Walk out, fly home with that big Battle for Atlantis trophy. Tigers cover, Tigers win straight up.
Man, a football program just won the Battle of the Bones trophy a few weeks ago. That's a trophy of ribs.
Yeah.
To be able to bring this one home so soon thereafter in what is a rematch of the 1985 Final Four.
It is, isn't it?
It's my first bad sports memory. Set me up for a life of disappointment. My first sad sports memory is Villanova 52, Memphis State 45 in the 1985 Final Four. I went back and watched the final seconds this morning.
Do either of these teams get to 45 by half today?
No. No.
Yeah, I'll say no.
But that's just to say. I'm taking that guy. What do you want me to do? Give me Memphis plus +3.
There we go.
Bring another trophy. To the Bluff City. Game two Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Number 13, Baylor versus Florida inside the Jay-Z Center in Brooklyn. Did you know JC was born in the Bahamas?
Stop.
He wasn't. You can watch this one on ESPN. Oh, by the way, had a good Thanksgiving argument last night. Sure. My mom's watching the Memphis-Tennessee game. Walk in. Arkansas. I'm like,
wait, where did Memphis play Tennessee in football?
Memphis, Arkansas. I'm sorry.
Yes, what's going on?
My mom's watching Memphis, Arkansas. And she's like, hey, do you know this girl? Do you know this woman? Like, she's really excited to tell me something.
And I said, Dolly Parton, mom.
And I said, whoa. Hey, calm down. We'll slow down here. Why are you so excited? She's like, do you know that woman right there? Do you know her? I was like, no, I don't think I've ever met her. She said, that's Andrea Carter. I said, yeah. I'm familiar with her work. I don't think I know her. I thought that's what you were asking. She said, you know, that's Jay-Z's sister. I said, I don't think that's Jay-Z's sister. She said, yeah, she played basketball at Tennessee and she's Jay-Z's sister. And I said, I don't think that's true. And she said, well, I looked it up. Jay-Z has a sister named Andrea Carter. And this is Andrea Carter. And I said, you realize there's probably multiple people named Andrea Carter in the world, right? I don't have to tell you this. And so I had to spend part of my Thanksgiving Googling pictures of Jay-Z's sister to prove to my mother that it wasn't the woman doing sideline reporting on Memphis, Arkansas. That's neither here nor there, though.
Oh. Just quite the Thanksgiving for you. That's quite the...
Hey, it's better than some arguments people have on Thanksgiving.
That's true.
Some people were probably arguing about Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
Not at my house. We were arguing about Jay-Z's sister.
Yeah, no, that's a good point there. Baylor has won 14 of its last... A typical swerve here on the pod. Baylor, 14 out of its last 15 regular season neutral site games. Baylor wins 14-1 in that stretch. Obviously, we've got another one coming up here on Friday. Florida's looking solid so far this season. This is a good test. This might sneakily be one of the best games of the day. Florida has been pretty quality on offense so far this season. 86 points or more and shot 47% or better from the field in the four games that it has won. Walter Clayton, who I anticipated, not Riley Kugel, Walter Clayton, who I had on my top 100. Are you about to apologize to him too? Everyone's like, Riley Kugel. No, Walter Clayton's going to be the most important player for this Florida team. Okay. 6 of 8 shooting from three, 20 points, 10 rebounds. The other night, nice win over Pitt. I got to go Baylor here though, man. At Baylor top five in the preseason. I'm not going to shift off of that. This is the event. No disrespect to the event, but the NIT tip-off, it gets played the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the Friday after. That Wednesday before Thanksgiving is almost always a friends and family only special, man. Like, that is to have to play a game on Thanksgiving Eve in Brooklyn with no regional ties, and that building just seems depressing as hell to me. So credit to both those teams for getting the win. Should be a little bit of a better vibe today. I will go Baylor to cover the five.
Jacoby Walter, the one college basketball player named after both John Morant and Kobe Bryant, averaging 19.2 points, 4.8 rebounds, 1.4 steals for Baylor. 6'5 guards making 41.9% of his 6.2 three-pointers that he's attempting per game. That's a good way to be a top 10 pick, isn't it?
He's for real. He's the truth. Many reasons to tune into this kind of game, but in particular, let's see if Walter can have another huge day. He's been every bit as much of the hype player as he was made out to be coming into the season.
And you touched on it, but just sort of a reminder of where we're at with college basketball. Here's Florida, top three scorers, all Division I transfers in their first years with the program. Walter Clayton, Tyrese Samuel is another one from Seton Hall. 13.8 points playing a fifth year of college basketball. You know me, I'm basically a member of the Drew family at this point. Feel like I'm basically a Drew. Could have had a little Greek freak.
And I don't care.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Me and Bryce are basically brothers at this point. So, yeah, I got to take Baylor. What are you talking about? Homer would be, you think I want to spend Black Friday on the phone with Homer trying to explain to him why I picked against his son? No chance. Game three, Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Iowa State, Virginia Tech inside Davey Johnson Fieldhouse in Orlando. You can watch it on ESPN2. Iowa State -6.
Why'd you pick this game? Out of curiosity.
Because I wanted to make sure you understand that if you remove all preseason bias over at Bart Torvik, do you know where Iowa State is?
Behind James Madison?
In front, significantly.
They're off to a good start. Virginia Tech, by the way, rallied to beat
Boise. Top five at Torvik right now, if you remove preseason bias, mm-hmm. BYU...
It's number one.
Pick 13th in the Big 12, currently number one at Torvik.
How about that? They also destroyed. I did not watch Arizona State. A complete evisceration on Thursday night.
BYU, Houston, Purdue, UConn, Iowa State is 5.
Good on Iowa State.
TJ Otzelberger got another nice team once again.
Well, and TJ has made something of a habit here since he got this job at having really strong starts. And obviously getting to the tournament 2 years in a row. This team is set up to do it again. Defensively, it's good. Lipsy is the guy. I mean, he is his second year point guard right now, averaging 15.6 points, 6.4 assists, 4.6 rebounds, highly efficient. If you haven't seen Iowa State yet, it is time to tune in here on Friday. Virginia Tech was able to flip the script on Boise State. I thought Boise State was going to win that game. Mike Young's team, which has a loss to South Carolina, which doesn't look as bad now as maybe as it maybe looked 2 weeks ago when it happened. Good opportunity here. I got bad news for you, man. You got to go against me on game three. I'm going to take Iowa State to win and cover on this line, which means you're taking the Hokies.
Oh, man. I'm basically like an Otzelberger when you think about it.
No.
I have to take Virginia Tech.
I mean, you know what? I'll stick with my own philosophy. You don't have to do it. You made this rule out of thin air and continue to abide by it. So, yeah, I'm taking
You realize if I just pick the same game you pick every game for the rest of the season, I will win.
Unfortunately, you don't have that ability because on the and one, you pick it before I do. So I will have the ability to go against you when I see the time to be right.
Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always. You. There's always a flaw with my plan.
Step ahead.
All right, fine. I'll go Virginia Tech, but I don't feel good about it. It's not what I want to do. Davey Johnson, born in Orlando, manager of the 86 Mets.
Okay.
Game four, Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Number 17, Alabama versus Ohio State. Inside Emeril Lagasse Arena.
That's not his name.
What's his name?
Lagasse.
Is it?
I don't think it's Lagasse.
Is it Lagasse?
I think it's Lagasse. Can we get a chat update? Phonetically spell it out. I think it's Lagasse.
It is Lagasse.
There we go.
Well, that's dumb. That's dumb. It's
the voice from above.
It is Lagasse. He bought a home in Destin, Florida, I gather.
This is your pick? This is who you're naming the arena after?
Yes.
Oh, man.
He changed his name to Lagasse and moved to Destin, Florida. Started a new life.
He's not in witness protection.
Yes, he did. Yes, he is. He entered witness protection, changed his name to Emeril Lagasse
than ever.
And settled in Destin, Florida.
You've knocked off one vowel off the end of your name.
Yes. Yes. He's in disguise by removing one letter from his name. And he moved to Destin. He moved to the Panhandle. The Florida Panhandle. Those beautiful white beaches. You don't know nothing about the Florida Panhandle.
I don't, admittedly.
Yeah. So Emeril Lagasse. Wink, wink. That's where we're going to play this thing. You can watch it on CBS Sports Network.
Damn right you can.
Alabama -7.5.
Alabama, we have not yet talked about this season on the pod because it has beaten Morehead State, Indiana State, South Alabama, and Mercer. Right now, number one offense at KenPom. Best three-point shooting team in the country. Alabama's making 49% of its three-point attempts. I promise you that will not be the rate when we look up a month from now, let alone at the end of the season. That's why the line is what it is, by the way. Ohio State is 3-1. It lost a game at home against Texas A&M 2 weeks ago. Its other wins have come against Oakland, Merrimack, and Western Michigan. This is a tough read here. I'm going to say that's a pretty big line. Playing this one in Niceville, Destin, Florida, right? I'll go Buckeyes to cover that number. That's a big number. I'll go with Chris Holtmann. He never gets enough credit. I will go OSU inside the number. But of the five we're going to pick here, this one, to me, is shrouded in the most mystery.
Alabama. Best wins over Indiana State.
Yeah.
Which is, man, they're getting real close to Indiana at KenPom. It's a battle for third between Indiana State and Indiana right now. Purdue comfortably in first. Butler in second. And then it's Indiana third, Indiana State fourth. But it's close, buddy. It's close. Indiana better thank God that Alabama was able to handle the Sycamores, or else we could be having a different conversation today. Mark Sears for Alabama averaging a team-high 19.5 points. And both the transfers have been pretty good. Aaron Estrada, Grant Nelson.
Yes, for sure.
Estrada's at 15.3 points. Grant Nelson's 13.8 points. Emeril Lagasse, 11.2.
Coming off the bench.
Coming off the bench. Boom!
No, was it? Bam!
I don't know. I don't even know who this person is.
Okay.
I just saw his name on Wikipedia. Everything I know about everything I get from Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I don't know anything else about anything.
Let's not follow that advice throughout our life.
No, the only things I know in life, they're not things I learned in school. They're things I learned on Wikipedia. I'll take Alabama just to go different from you.
Now don't take what you think is going to happen. Don't take just to be different from me. That's how you blow a lead. That's how you get mounted.
I feel like my lead is surmountable. Insurmountable.
No. It's as mountable as it gets.
I feel like I have an insurmountable lead.
Statistically, it doesn't get more surmountable than this.
You think I'm going to be surmounted?
Yeah, I don't think.
You're predicting me to be surmounted.
I am inevitable, yes.
Damn it. Well, I don't know what I think. That's the problem about getting my age. You don't even know what you think anymore, you know? I'm taking Alabama minus the 7.5.
I thought it was 8.
It's 7.5.
Okay. Might have been outdated. Either way. All right. Other games to watch before we get to the N1, and we are going to hustle here. Carolina, Arkansas is your 1 Eastern tip on ESPN for third place in the battle for Atlantis. We'll talk about that game regardless on the Sunday episode. Oklahoma, USC, packed football day, particularly over tomorrow on Saturday. Friday's got some stuff, but man, there's a lot of hoops here. So hopefully you're able to make in some time in between the Black Friday shopping. Oklahoma, USC is 3:30 Eastern on Fox. That game's going to be in San Diego. Oklahoma, no doubt about it, win over Iowa. Really impressive stuff. USC squeaked past.
Wow.
What?
My computer almost fell.
What is happening?
That was rough. That was a tough situation. I almost had a fumble.
Okay. Oh, man. Parrish. You still a little stuff from last night, buddy?
No, baby. I slept good.
Okay. I'm reading my games off. I don't have you on my screen. I honestly thought you fell out of your chair. I didn't know what was going on. A little peek behind the curtain. That's how the magic is made. Okay, continuing. Texas Tech, Michigan, 6 Eastern, ESPNU for fifth place in the battle for Atlantis. Juwan Howard is back on the sidelines. Have you seen any of Michigan's past two games? So Phil Martelli is still the acting head coach.
That's weird.
Well, it is weird. And there
I think, listen.
Throughout these games where you got Martelli standing up at one point on the sideline and about 8 to 10 to 12 feet to his right, Juwan Howard also standing up and barking out commands. But Martelli is still the acting head coach. It's an unusual dynamic. That's all I'm going to say.
What if they just decide this works better and this is the way they're just going to do it from now on?
Co-head coaches.
Juwan and everybody else can do whatever they want. I were the head coach, I would be like, if I'm on the bench, I'm coaching. If I'm not, I'm not coaching, I'm not on the bench.
And there's more, and I know GP knows this, but for our listeners, like, there is more that goes into like prep for a game and who's the acting head. Like, there are actually duties behind the scenes that people never see. But if you're going to be on the bench and you are paid as the head coach, like, you just be the head coach. Like, you're there. What are we doing here? But it's still Martelli. I didn't know. I was watching Wednesday and I don't know. I tuned in at some point in the first half. I don't remember when. And I was watching for all of maybe 2 minutes and then I see them pan to Juwan on the bench and I was like, oh, he came back. I was like, there wasn't a release. Did I miss this? Because I wondered if maybe at the last minute he might. I was like, okay, cool. He came back. And then a beat later, like, it pans out and it's got Martelli barking out orders. And then a beat after that, the way I processed this, I was like, wait a second, what the hell's going on here? And then I went and found, I was like, Juwan Howard's made the decision to sit on the bench. Phil Martelli is still the acting coach. And I was like, this is a strange vibe. This, I don't know about this. But you know what? If anything, I say we do it for the rest of the season. Just lean into it. Why the hell not? If you haven't seen this yet, you can watch it later on tonight, 6 Eastern ESPNU. Texas Tech versus Michigan. NC State plays BYU, 10:30 Eastern, ESPN2 in Vegas. BYU, the best team in the country, according to Torvik. Saturday and Sunday is super light, but two mid-majors to note. Furman at UAB and Vermont at Bradley. I would take the over of 2.5 of those teams being in the NCAA tournament in 2024. Keep an eye out. Okay, and one podcast record here. Never happened before. We are inside of an hour until this game tips off. on Donald Duck Court. 11 a.m. Eastern down there in Florida. After a really impressive show, GP, it was an impressive showing on Thursday by Florida Atlantic. They beat Butler 91-86. FAU against Texas A&M in the semifinals. A&M is a 3.5-point favorite against Dusty May's Owls. Who you got?
God.
A&M by 3.5.
I either got to pick against Buzz Williams or against my Owls. That's not where I wanted to spend Black Friday. Our friend John Rothstein just tweeted that Nick Boyd out for this matchup against A&M.
He was out yesterday as well. Didn't stop him against Butler.
Well, Butler ain't Texas A&M.
It's not.
I spent 5 months screaming about Florida Atlantic. I can't bail on them now, can I?
You can do whatever you want.
I don't feel like I can do what I want. I haven't felt like I could do what I want in a long time.
Do whatever you want here.
I don't feel like I'm allowed to do what I want to do.
You're doing a 75-minute podcast the morning after Thanksgiving. Who loves you?
Not sure about that. I'm going to ride with my Owls.
Get inside that number?
Yeah, plus the 3.5. I don't feel great about it, but I don't feel great about anything.
You know what? I'm going to take A&M, and I don't feel great about it either. So we're on opposite sides of this game, and both of us don't like it. So somehow it's going to go against both of us. Don't know how that's possible.
Don't think it is.
These teams might find a way. I will go A&M here to cover 3.5. I do not. I want to let it be known. I don't feel good about this whatsoever. Hey, and as we wrap this, life hack out there. Life hack for those who may not be aware of it. Pumpkin pie for breakfast this time of year.
Whoa.
Completely allowable. It's a great... It didn't even dawn on me until a few years ago. I don't know if I ever brought it up in the pod. Pumpkin pie for breakfast, or if you're a sweet potato pie. Either way, allowable for at least the next 5 days.
It's healthy, too. That's the bonus part, is it's so good for you.
There's going to be at least one person listening to this pod's like, I never considered that. But yeah, it absolutely makes sense. Get in there. Pumpkin pie. Oh. I'm going to do it after. I didn't eat before we did the pod.
I haven't eaten yet either.
I want to get some pumpkin pie once we turn off the pod machine here.
I wonder if I got some pumpkin pie downstairs.
Get into it. It's the move.
If not, I could get that fella Emeril Lagasse.
Okay. I think he's gone from Lagasse to Lagasse to Lagasse.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Emeril Lagasse.
Too much pumpkin pie for breakfast. You might be Lagasse. So just keep an eye.
That seems like a perfect place to.
Yes.
That seems like a perfect place to end this. It does. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle Legends. Shouts to Huck, Larnell, Emerald. Thank you guys once again for watching. Listen to the Iowa College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. So knock that out. We're going to talk to you again on Sunday night. Till then, take care.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo. Thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.